This show has been brought to you by the Thomas Allen Collection. The Thomas Allen Collection is a men's accessory line designed to attract and capture a variety of tastes with a unique appeal. Thomas Allen strives to produce an extraordinary design to turn a new leaf on fashion for men and at desired occasions. If I told you once, I told you several times on this podcast that ladies, get your men a Thomas Allen Collection tie. They'll love it. Gentlemen, get you a Thomas Allen Collection tie. You can't go wrong with rocking a Thomas Allen Collection tie at a formal event. I'll be rocking one in an upcoming at the CBC events. BG, don't you own a Thomas Allen Collection tie?
Yes, sir. And they way fly than anything that's already out there. I got a couple of them, so I recommend going out there and getting some of that flay.
Yep, Thomas Allen Collection. You can reach him at 678-960-9171. 678-960-9171. Thomas Allen, when tying a knot really counts. Now on to the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, a classic.
A classic.
This love. It's been a long, long time coming. But I know a change gonna come. Yeah, I chose the path. The path chose me. This is a love plan. Divine decree. Natural high. Window sheet. Up a parallel view. Let the ghetto see. BK.
Welcome to the Free Lunch Podcast, home of the New South Movement. This is your boy Tight Tight, and I have my main man with me, B-Jeezy. What's happening?
Yeah, I'm here, but I'm mad, though.
What you mad at, sir?
Man, I feel like I didn't experience some racism today. The Congressional Black Caucus won't let me in.
Denied?
They denied my media credentials, man. I was looking forward to being able to cover the events next weekend, and they trying to keep a brother out. I believe they being racist. Internal racism.
All residents of Selma, Alabama will be denied to the Congressional Black Caucus.
Man, after all we done for this country.
Y'all already done been celebrated, sir. You just they celebrated in March. Y'all celebrated in August. That's it. It's time for the rest of the world to kind of shine today.
They didn't piss me off with that, but I sent my email though, so I put your name on it too, so they you might experience some backlash.
They already accepted me, so now I'm gonna be denied because they think I'm affiliated with you.
But other than that, man, we in for another exciting show.
It will be because I think we have another inspiring story similar to a number of the podcasts that we've dropped and released. And really, BG, I just want to get straight to the point and really bring her on. You mind if I give her the proper introduction?
Do your thing.
I'm going to bring her out the right way. The
yes,
CEO
sir.
Of One Touch Events.
Uh-huh.
She's a verb in a world full of nouns.
Yes, she is.
She don't talk the talk. She actually walks the walk. She enjoys a great glass of Malbec. Charismatic. Calculated and cool. Wedding social event planner. An alumni of Auburn University. With no further ado, I'd like to invite the Free Lunch family, and I'd like to introduce the world to someone that I think has a very inspiring story. And seriously speaking, she is a verb in a world full of nouns. She's a hyena. She's a hungry hyena. And no further ado, I'd like to introduce the world of Jillian Jill Smith. How are you today, sir? Lady? Ma'am?
Well, I was going to say thank you for the introduction until you forgot my gender, but it's all good.
Hey, you got me. I don't have to do take two. This is take two of the whole thing. She got me nervous, BG. It's the first time
then,
I've been
and
nervous.
Then call you, and then call you a hyena, too. So I don't
hungry
know what's
hyena,
going on.
Hungry hyena. She's hungry.
Yeah, like I'm tearing up like all the wildlife around, yeah. I guess.
You're a little bit of everything today, but we're glad to have you, Jill.
No, that's a compliment. That's a hungry hyena.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for damn Eagle. I am very excited to be here.
Well, thank you for joining us today. How are you? How have things been going? It's been a while.
I know it's been a while. I was actually, while I mentioned before, I was on Periscope talking to a few of my followers there, and was just saying I haven't seen you guys in so long, and over, you know, the fall season is a busy wedding season and just in the South in general. So I can never really get to Auburn during football season to see you guys, but everything has been going well. And I can't complain and nobody wants to hear it.
So is the fall season the busiest or summer the busiest for wedding planning and having weddings?
For me and for most of my colleagues, at least in the Southeast. So One Touch Events is located in Atlanta, Georgia, but we travel Southeast and abroad. For in the Southeast, because, you know, we have all four seasons, the spring season and the fall season, because of the mild temperatures, the variability of rain where it's not as rainy season, tend to be the busiest season. So May's and October's, usually those dates go well into a year or two before, you know, get booked out. And April here and there, September, November, and it's sprinkled throughout the year, but those are going to be our craziest season. So that's why we don't take any vacation during that time, because that's when you're out there really pumping.
So who's getting married in October? They definitely didn't graduate from a school in the Southeastern Conference. They did not.
That's what I'm saying.
The audacity.
Your LB.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And your chapter brothers.
Yeah, I don't know what they were thinking.
They love getting married in the fall.
Yes, yes, yes. But it's a large number of people that get married during the fall season in the South?
Yes, yes. So my October is the first month in almost 4 years. My business will be 4 years old. This coming November will be the first month that I am completely booked all 5 weekends. Oh, so that is tremendous. But at the same time, it's the norm. So May and October are usually the first, you know, like I mentioned, the first weekends to get booked. And for those, like to your point about football season, I've had couples that have changed their wedding date to go around the football schedule, but it's for their particular school, or they'll wait until after football season altogether and get married maybe in December.
Shout out to the bride for making accommodations.
Exactly. So let's take a step back. Can you tell us a little bit about One Touch Events and what exactly it is that you've been doing for the past 4 years?
So One Touch Events, it's my baby. And we started in November of 2011. I chose the day of 11-11-11 because, you know, why not? It's memorable. It's one of those days that's never going to happen again. And during that time, I started out with social events. So just social event planning, birthday parties, a few business events here and there. And I actually started branding myself as an event and wedding professional starting in 2013. So I wanted to really fill out my business to see what I liked and what I didn't like before I said, okay, so this is what One Touch Events is all about. So 2013, I actually did my very first wedding under the brand and have been going ever since. So we do wedding planning, social event planning, which are anything that's not a wedding. So it's a birthday party, an anniversary event, a retirement event, as well as some business events. So I've done a few client appreciation parties. I actually have started to get a clientele of business owners that do multi-day events. That aren't looking for your normal meeting event planner. So they're looking for someone that understands how to plan an event and also can bring the pretty and the client experience there as well.
So you started off as a doing social events and you've kind of grown into the whole wedding planning over the past 2 years or so.
Exactly. So the very first wedding that you could say I planned was my sister's, and y'all probably know your version of BG, my sister Bridget. So when she was engaged, she wasn't as engaged in her wedding planning, and it was like, okay, so no, we're not going to do that, and yes, you really should care about this, and when are we going to make a decision about that? And I've been planning events for so long that, you know, it was just natural for me to say, okay, well I guess I'm planning your wedding. And at the same time, I was planning my 30th birthday party. So doing both of those in tandem gave me that like, why aren't you doing this? Why are you still, you know, kind of deciding what, where do you want your pathway to go? So I said, okay, well, I love planning events. I've been doing it for probably 15 years on and off with friends and family. So maybe I should make this into a business.
Talking about social media, I can remember seeing the steps that you just spelled out with you posting, you know, the pictures and the announcements of certain events that you were putting together and hosting and stuff like that. So to look back here now, 2015, to see that progression really is a testament to you answering that call and then going about it in a very determined and calculated fashion.
And the reason why in the intro to the Free Lunch Family that I called her Verb is because once we take a step back and walk through Jill's journey, I think you all understand where that adjective or where that analogy came from. And so if you don't mind us kind of going back to your high school days and just kind of getting an understanding of your background. So are your parents, were your parents entrepreneurs?
Yeah, to a certain extent, my parents were entrepreneurs. So I am originally from Birmingham, Alabama, product of the Fairfield and Midfield school systems. And the year was likely 1983, 82, 83. And I was a toddler. My parents opened up a store called S&W Small Grocery. So S&W was Smith and Wilkins. Wilkins is my mom's maiden name. So it was, you know, like how you have the corner stores like back in the day, and now they're all kind of shut down and boarded up. They had one of the corner stores that, if anyone that's listening is familiar with the Birmingham area, it was close to Winona High School. So in that area, so we had a store that sold, you know, groceries, and it had arcade games, because I kind of vaguely still remember like the Pac-Man and the Gallagher game that we had in the store. They sold ribs and fish sandwiches, and we had this huge tree in the front that I used to play under. And so that was really, I think that's where my father and my mother both had entrepreneurial spirits. So they still worked their full-time jobs and opened up this store. My grandparents, actually, my grandfathers ran the store, and they had that for about 7 or 8 years before it closed.
Just off of that, growing up in a household where you have parents that are entrepreneurs, were those kind of conversations that your parents had with you to say, hey, you really should start your own business, you should do your own thing? How did that conversation happen throughout your childhood and adolescence?
That's really a great question for that. No, I was sitting here shaking my head. No, they didn't instill you be your own boss, you know, in terms of opening up your own business. My mom was a first generation, and if I think through it, still may be the only, until we came, she was first generation to actually go to college in her family. My father was blue collar, so he didn't go to college. So they really instilled in us, go all the way. And their all the way was getting your undergraduate degree. My mom went and had an associate. My dad didn't go to college. So it's go and get a degree, get it in something that you can get a job and that you can sustain yourself. You can move out of our house, but be a productive member of the society. But from an entrepreneurial standpoint, it wasn't like, you know, go out and, you know, make your own way. It was make your own way while you have a job.
And BG, if you remember when we had Bill on, this was a very common kind of conversation that we had when we kind of talked about how our parents, the blueprint that they instilled in us, is very similar and similar to what Jill's saying now, is that they wanted the best for us, and they wanted us to essentially do better than they were, quote unquote, doing. So their answer was to go out, get that college degree, go to college. And then after you graduate, get a good job and be able to make a living.
This is what makes us unique as a group, though, because like most of our parents were first generation to even step foot onto college campuses. So for them, the next step was to maybe get a higher level type of degree, but still getting into a job or into a career that you could have this sustained livelihood, but not really impressing upon us to be your own bosses, because we weren't really familiar with that from a generational standpoint. So this is why it's so important for us to share these stories and really touch on that commonality that we have. So when we look at somebody like Jill and some of the other people that we've had on that have taken that entrepreneurial spirit and run with it, it's inspiration for us that, hey, we could do the same thing. So it's really important for us to tell these type of stories.
You see, your parents have their own business and own their own business, but there's no conversation really directly between you and your parents to encourage mm-hmm. you to be your own boss, correct?
It was more so do the best you can in school. So we didn't have a, you know, I have friends that said that when they got their report cards, they would get money for X amount of money for every A. Then you get something for if you have a B, and even if you have a C. Like, C's were not even a conversation topic in our house. Like, you don't bring home a C. You barely bring home a B. Right. So it was all about just making sure that you got your work done and you did it exceedingly well so that you can, you know, go to college, be able to do well there, and then be able to get your degree and get your job. So those were really, that was really the recurring theme, the recurring mantra in our household was to be your own person and not have to rely on anyone else. And most of it because my dad had three girls, and he would show us how to do things on our own, because he said, you may get a sour husband, you know, so you don't want to have to rely on anybody else to make your way in this world.
That sounds like my household, actually, in regards to you couldn't bring home a C. A's and B's were the expectation. And like you said, a B was really something looked upon as though, okay, you bring home a B. But quick question. I heard you say you it was three of you all, and you the middle child. I'm a middle child as well. Do you have middle child syndrome?
What do we consider middle child syndrome? Where yeah, we
clarify it.
How would you clarify it?
Well, I would say for me, I don't feel like I had middle child syndrome only because my older sister didn't grow up with us. So I was the oldest in the household. So that's why I said, well, I guess I had middle child tendencies because I knew I had an older sister, but I'm very much a the big sister. And because it was me and my little sister in the house. So that's why I was like, well, what do you say? What are middle child's issues?
I'm the perfect example of a middle child with middle child syndrome, and probably BG and my siblings would be the best people to kind of talk about some of the craziness that I have. So I'll leave it at that. I'll leave it at that. Fast forward. So you go to college, you decide to go to Auburn University, which is the greatest place on earth. You go there. Can you just kind of speak to your major and what you studied at Auburn?
Yeah, so I went in with the mindset of I need to get a business degree and wasn't really sure where. I started off with marketing, but I ended up with a degree in the College of Business, Information Systems Management.
Anything of importance that happened at Auburn that we should kind of touch on before we talk about what happened post-Auburn?
Yes. So part of what helped cultivate where I am today in my business, which did start in high school. I started planning events as early as like eighth grade. So there was always something to plan from because I was very involved. And I think that's part of being like a big sister, but also middle child, where your parents kind of experimenting with you. And I was involved in a lot of different organizations where we had to plan either fundraisers or socials or after school, this, that, or the third. But at Auburn, I was part of an organization called the University Program Council, UPC. I know y'all are familiar with it, where we brought events on campus for the student body. And being a part of that organization helped me hone in on those larger scale events, such as whenever I have my conversations with some of my clients or potential clients, they always ask, so tell me about your story. You know, I say, well, my claim to fame is that I was on the team that brought Ludacris to Auburn. Y'all remember when Auburn?
That's your claim to fame.
It is my claim to fame. That,
that was big.
It was a big deal, and it took a lot of planning. It took a lot of preparation. We had to talk to his managers. We had a budget. We had, you know, his rider wasn't nowhere near where it probably is today, but we had to make sure that certain things were in place backstage. He wasn't going to hang around long, like literally ran off stage and got into, and it wasn't even a tour bus, it was like a van. He had on a big t-shirt that looked like it came from like Old Navy. So, you know, we were like in the very beginning stages of Ludacris. So I think it's a big deal.
So Luda played on cheat. He said, I ain't gonna even dress up for this one.
No,
he did not. I have a picture because I was backstage and I was like, even his braids weren't even tight. Sorry, Luda.
he also got us too, because for some reason you guys brought on Ludacris before 17th Floor. So Luda came on. I remember this. Luda came on after he got off stage. I felt so bad for 17th Floor, because 17th Floor was actually a good band. Yeah,
they were tight.
And everybody left. Yep. And it was like Luda opened for 17th Floor. And I'm like, what the hell? Like, she's 17th. Am I right?
No, we were in the student activity center, and it was just like everybody just kind of left after that. So it should have been just a little Ludacris concert. But I mean, at that point, you know, I was one of African Americans on UPC. So no one else understood what I was trying to tell them about Ludacris. They just saw how much he cost and we can get him here. And that was it. So it just really, I was able to see that side of production wise, because we had at that point, because I know it's probably as much as, or if not more, we used to have $50,000 for the whole year. That's a lot of, you know, as a kid, because, you know, you're still in your early 20s, that's a whole lot of money to have to manage. Helped me with my business.
Ty, let me say this before you say what you're going to say. Okay, Jill, on behalf of all of the black students that were on campus during that period of time, we thank you for bringing Ludacris to campus. Well, because before then, we didn't have that kind of entertainment coming to the yard.
But hold on before you thank him, because were you also on the committee that brought the Yin Yang Twins to Auburn?
No, I was not. I was not.
Thank whoever that person was too.
Do y'all remember when the Yin Yang Twins came?
I do.
Okay, I'm just asking. But seriously, it's funny that you mentioned that, because so we did a series on this podcast and I don't know if you're a religious person or not, so excuse me, but we kind of used David as an example, where we talked about how before he fought Goliath, he actually fought lions and bears, etc. And so he was being equipped to walk into that battle with David. And it sounds like similarly, and we speak about this throughout different podcasts, how if you really look back over your journey, life will prepare you for tomorrow. So in your case, planning since the eighth grade, bringing Ludacris to the campus, all of those things are kind of tools that you've kind of put in your tool bag that would eventually be useful to when you launch your own business.
I 150% agree with that. It was so many, when I sit and think back sometimes and I get emotional about it, is that when what you hear as a kid and you start to understand as an adult and never apologize for like being spiritual, because that's what you are. I am. So I sit and think back and I was like, there is really a reason that there's this thing called a journey. God puts a path together for you and you never understand it until you start getting there. And I'm not saying that I'm there yet, but just seeing all the experiences that I have had over the past like 20 years. And it's so funny to say 20 years, but that's where we are. Over the past 20 or so years, it's like he was laying this thing out for me way before I even knew myself. Right. And I'm still learning myself. So yeah, definitely. The tools have been laid out. He's giving me my tool belt. And now it's time to get to work.
We did a session with the young folks this past summer, and I kind of shared that exact same thing, was essentially just pay attention to the skills that you're learning now, because when you get to be my age and you get to be older, they're going to be useful, and you may not understand now some of the, you know, one of the things we used to do is sit in the back of the bus, and we would, what they call jank, or we would kind of jone on people. And that sounds funny, and that sounds like, but it's a skill set that I developed that I use today, that I can think fast on my feet and be able to kind of when I'm in meetings or that kind of thing. So anyway, anything else in that college period or time frame?
You know, during my tenure at Auburn, you know, I had tons of highs and I had a few lows that y'all are very familiar with. And now that's a whole nother podcast for another day. But I was able to learn humility, learn how to, you know, learn people, knowing that everything doesn't always go your way. And sometimes you have to just let it go, but also developing a tougher skin, which you need when you're in business. And then it started to get cultivated as I got into corporate America, because it's even, that's another beast to deal with. But just being able to be involved on campus, any young people that are listening in, get involved so that you can be able to speak. It's not even a different language, but you are speaking a different language when you're able to work with people of all walks of life, different nationalities, ethnicities, backgrounds, because my clients today come from all over. I have, interfaith weddings. I have Jewish weddings. I have same-sex weddings. I have high-end. I have we just trying to be in their weddings. So just being able to be able to relate to all of those different facets of people is important, and it started right there on the campus of Auburn University, War Eagle.
So you graduate, get your degree at MIS, and I don't know if you went directly to a consulting firm, but was that your first job you took out of college?
No, I had a lot of no's right out of school. We were in a very mini recession in 2003. So I took the first yes. And that led me to a company called Total Systems, or TSIS, if anyone's familiar, that's headquartered in Columbus, Georgia. So it was right down the road from Auburn. So I stayed in Auburn for a few months before I transitioned over to Columbus. And I started working as a BA, or business analyst. And I absolutely hated my job. I absolutely hated it. I hated Columbus. I hated my boss. And I say hate is a really, really strong word. But I highly disliked everything about what I was doing. I was like, is this what a MIS degree really entails? And once I had friends that were, you know, that also graduated MIS and finding out what they were doing at their jobs, I said, no, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. So, I stayed there for about 9 months before I transitioned over to the consulting world, which is when I worked for Accenture. Okay, so at Accenture.
The reason I ask is because I remember a conversation we had back in 2010 or so, where you pretty much had an ultimatum, and that ultimatum was either I'm getting promoted or I'm leaving. Can you kind of talk about that experience in the consulting world?
I used to say, oh my gosh, it was like the worst, but it was the best, the very best experience, again, from a building my business acumen. So when I was at Accenture, I traveled extensively. Every once in a while, I was based in the Atlanta office. So that's what brought me to Atlanta. And every once in a while, like the first year, I would have a project here and there that were in the Atlanta area. But then I started traveling. And for those that are not familiar, I was a road warrior. And that means that you're flying out either on Sunday night or Monday morning. You're flying back home either on Thursday night or Friday morning. Some projects I would stay all the way until Friday night. So you're literally like not at home more than 36 hours. So it was draining. It was demanding, a lot of hours spent in the office, spent in front of clients. Sometimes you were there alone. And when I say alone, you may be the sole consultant resource on that particular piece of the project at that client. So you had to be your own boss. Essentially, like you didn't have anyone standing over you saying, hey, where is this TPS report? You know, it really was you knew what you had to go in there and do. And here's the person that you reach out to from a client standpoint. That's your counterpart, and get it done. And then we're going to review you at the end of the year or at the end of the project. And then a culmination of all your projects turn into your annual review. So fast forwarding to 2010. Really, before that, the ultimatum that you speak of, Jeremy,
do you remember that?
I do, because I did get promoted and then I left. And the reason being, because I had already left in my mind before I got promoted. I didn't feel it anymore. I was not interested in doing anything else they told me to go do. You need to fly here. You need to work for this particular company. You have to do this particular work. And I end up getting pigeonholed because I was so good. I mean, it's a good thing, but I was so good at being a tester and implementation on the implementation and testing side. And I really wanted to get on the strategic side. And it was like pulling teeth to try to even get a role in that particular area of a project, because they were like, well, you have so much testing experience and you're so great at it. So this is what you're going to continue to do. And it was hard to move up with that. And you know, there's a lot of the, you know, people say, well, it's who you know, like, yeah, a lot of it was who you know and who would put you under their wing and fly with you. And, you know, I never make excuses. But I saw firsthand how there were people getting promoted left and right that I did 15 times more work than they did, put in way more hours and had better output, but they're still getting promoted early. And I'm still, you know, sitting on the consultant bench for 2 years saying, well, just, you know, let's try it again next time. And it's like, when is that time actually going to be there? So when I did finally get promoted, I was already gone. I was having headaches every day. Mm-hmm. So I felt it in my health. My health was being affected. So once my body says it's time to do something, then I started listening to it.
But even during that period, I don't know if you mind me bringing this up, but you were working out a lot and you lost some weight, and you really, your appearance, your outer appearance, you appear to be healthy.
Outer appearance. But you know, like anytime something happens to someone, you know, if they unfortunately, you know, pass out, have an aneurysm or a heart attack or take their own life, I was never at that point, just to be clear, but you never know what's going on the inside for anyone. You never know what's going on in their head, in their heart, in their spirit. And my spirit was tired. It was pissed. I found out how much money I wasn't making. And, you know, money is not always my driver because I am a Capricorn and I like validation in my work. But So I had validation in my work, but I wasn't seeing it in the, you know, in the coins in my bank account. And I find out that these other managers, you know, they're coming in and they're like 19,000 more than I am. And I said, okay, well, maybe because of the school they went to, or they have a technical degree. And then I find out consultants, a level lower than manager in Accenture, were making either what I was making or more than me. And I was like, something's just not right here. And having those conversations with the people that I was assigned to, I wasn't getting any traction there. It was like, well, you know, just work hard and we'll try again. No, are you going to give me a 400% raise? That's probably not going to happen. So I'm just working for what? Because I'm a great, you know, I'm great at my output.
That's a story that we run into. We talked about that a lot in previous podcasts. So at this point, you said that you basically were out of the door. Is that the moment where you decided that you were going to go down this entrepreneurial road?
So at that point, I started planning my sister's wedding, you know, during that time while I was still on the road, still at Accenture, because I was working in St. Louis when all this was going down, planning my dad's retirement party and my 30th birthday party. So all of those three things, I'm doing that virtually, essentially, and I was planning my exit. I had a headhunter reach out to me. In my mind and in my spirit, I was already gone. I had put my resume out there, but really wasn't searching. And Home Depot came knocking. And they made an offer I couldn't refuse. And then I was out. So, and that gave me the opportunity to be in town to actually start. Because that's when I started thinking, oh, you know what? I may want to do this full time. But I don't have time to even think about a business plan or creating a website or hell, like just going out there networking, because I'm on the road all the time. I need to be at home. I need to be settled so that I can really decide on what's next. And that's what brought me to the Home Depot, because there was zero, it was like -5 travel.
And how long are you at Home Depot before you kind of jump ship?
So with Home Depot, I started a couple weeks after I left Accenture, because I wanted to take my 30th birthday trip. I went to Italy. That was always the plan. I was like, I'm going to take a big trip for my 30th birthday, and I'm going to have a big party, and then I'll go back to work. Well, I went back to work before the big party. I started working at Home Depot, and I started to see, when you're a consultant, you see the clients as, okay, they're usually slow to catch on to new technologies, to new methodologies, to just a new way of thinking and saying, hey, well, we've been doing this for 40 years. Like, why are we changing? And you see people that are grandfathered in to the company and the culture. So when you get on that side of it, if you are that way, it's great. But if you have a hunger, I know it sounds cliche, but if you really are hungry, like a hunger inside of you, it will suck all of your ambitiousness out of you. And the organization that I went to inside of the company told me one thing. And when I got there, I was doing something totally different. And I felt like I took a big step back. Because they were doing things, and they're like, oh, I need you to do X, Y, Z. And I was like, man, I did this like 4 years ago. Like, y'all really still, you know, using like Microsoft Excel for this, or MS database, and we got green screens. Like, what's up? You know, I went from an innovative company to a company that didn't invest in a whole lot of technology for that particular organization. So I came in with my whole, I'm a go-getter, I'm going to go in here and knock it out while I'm still working on my business. And I started getting reorged. And for those that don't understand what reorg means, it means they will pick up your department and move you to another department. You have a new boss. You have no say-so in what you're going to start doing, where you're going to sit. You have a whole new, you know, pretty much skill set that you may have to learn. And I got reorged so many times that Home Depot started sucking the life out of me. I said, you know what? One touch event's got to work, because I got to get out of here. So I was at Home Depot until September of last year. I left a few weeks before my anniversary date, and I could care less about that anniversary. So coming up in a couple of weeks, I'll be 1 year full time with One Touch Events.
Does that mean you were doing a lot of one touch work on Home Depot time?
Absolutely.
Hey, don't incriminate yourself. I refuse
sound familiar.
I refuse sound to answer familiar. Any questions that I may be incriminating.
Just do the math. Just do the math.
And we're really finally at the point to why we wanted to actually bring you on our show, and we wanted to kind of talk about this, is because your path up until last September is really a path that most of our peers and our colleagues and just younger people are taking. And it's really been inspiring that you had the guts, or the courage is a better way to say that. You had the courage to kind of go full time. Can you talk about what was the boiling point, or what was that point, and what gave you that courage to just say, hey, I'm all in with One Touch?
So it was probably towards the end of 2013 where I saw my calendar filling up. There's always just that tipping point where, you know, either I did way more advertising. I was networking way more, that I started getting referrals from some of my industry peers, event industry peers. And, so I was like, this has to work. So let me start preparing for it, you know, in terms of finances and, you know, understanding what does it take to actually leave your job and start your, you know, like start it for real on your own. And I say for real because I already had my LLC, I had my business license, I had my website, I had all of that lined up. But what do I do, you know, in terms of insurance and things of that nature? So I started working on that. But 2014 was the busiest year. I had to start running out of vacation time, sick time, because every time I needed to be somewhere for a client, I had to take off work. If I needed to meet with someone during the daytime, I'm sneaking on the phone into a conference room, or I was in a stairwell. I had all these timelines that I had to work on for the wedding. So I had dual screens in my cube, so I would turn the screen sideways so I could work on these timelines. And it was so stressful and I was tired. But at the same time, I knew I needed to stack. I needed to stack my portfolio. I needed to stack my money. And, you know, like, I didn't want to turn anybody away. So I was like, yeah, we're going to have 3 events this weekend. Cool. We're going to work on it. I'll make it happen. And now I look like a zombie when I roll into the parking lot, the parking deck on that Monday morning, because I worked 3 12-hour, 14-hour days after leaving the office on Thursday. So that was part of the turning point. It was a lot of prayer, a lot of laying down and crying just to make sure I'm doing the right thing and it's not self-talking, but this is where you really guiding me. And it wasn't actually until I had a conversation with my dad that, you know, I was telling him about my business, and he asked me, so what's next? And I really, you know, I was like, I want to do this full time, Dad. And he said, well, you got to figure out how to make it happen. And I had one of my business clients is a motivational speaker, and she's turned into one of my repeat clients, one of my VIPs. But she teaches business owners, primarily African-American women, how to leave your 9-to-5 job. Again, boom, God has put me in this position. She hired me off of just looking at my raggedy website, because it was before it wasn't raggedy. I take that back. I built the website, but before I actually rebranded and had a professional, you always need to hire professionals, had a professional come in and do my website. She hired me because she felt a connection to me. And I'm sitting in working her multi-day event, and I'm taking notes. Everything that she was teaching these business owners that paid to listen to her, I was actually able to take some of those notes and apply them to my business. And once I looked at the back half of 2014, I had zero time left off. I was going to have to get a leave of absence or something to make everything happen for my clients. And then 2015 was filling up as well. I said, you know what? I'm just going to do it. I'm going to do it and see what happens. I can always get another job. So far, guys, I have not touched my resume.
So, BG, we talk about omens all the time. So, you know, one of my favorite books is The Alchemist.
Mm-hmm.
And that was when I kind of got introduced to omens and just seeing different signs. And even in Jill's case, it sounds like this motivational speaker that you were referring to was essentially that, an omen on your personal journey. Question. How does that work? Did you just write up a, a 2 week notice and just take it to your HR and just say, here go my 2 week notice?
No, well, I started to do my research. I had a contact over in HR just to feel around to see, you know, what I would need to do. Like, what can I take away with me? Am I going to lose any stock or, you know, from a financial standpoint? But essentially was a, no, you just give your notice and we take your stuff and then you leave. So it was so simple. So I decided to, I had a conversation with, again, another new boss. And so I took her, you know, I said, can we talk for a second? And I'm pretty sure she knew what was up. So she said, hey, so what's going on, Jillian? So I told her, I said, well, just wanted to let you know that I am putting in, today is my notice. And she said, your notice for what? She knew what I was talking about. But I said, today is my official notice that I'm leaving the company. And it was hilarious because she leaned in. She said, take me with you. Oh, my gosh. So it was, I mean, it was that simple because you have to start with your supervisor. They have all these hierarchy type rules at the company. So started with her and she said, okay, so let's work some things out. When do you want your last day to be? And I, you know, had to do my calculations, make sure I had at least two more paychecks coming. And so I said, this is the date. And
now you're your own boss. You're in charge of your own livelihood. How are you feeling when you really realize that it's all on you now?
It is a mixture of feelings. So part of what I discussed with some of my pals in the industry and those that have their own businesses, it's every day you can feel a little bit different. I say, you know, I love having the autonomy to do what I want to do, but I know what I need to do. So I still have to have structure. And I love that I can structure my structure. But I also, you know, every once in a while you do have like that breakdown, like, what did I just do? You know, because you're so accustomed to, at that point, I've been working for, you know, 14 years in corporate America. I've been working since I was 14. I actually had my first job at 14 and worked all the way through high school and worked all the way through college.
That don't even sound legal. That don't even sound legal right there, having a job at 14.
Well,
what had happened was.
Exactly. What had happened was I was trying to get Ludacris to come, but.
You know, you can get around some things in Alabama, child labor laws, they be like, what's that? But, yeah, so I've always worked. I've always had a work ethic. I've always had a, like, my dad was like, you always had a hustle to you. When I needed to make some additional money, I took notes for university notes, or I wanted to go and visit my older sister in California. So I was, like, slinging yellow pages in 1 year when I was in school. So it's like, I always knew that, you know, even when I felt like something wasn't right in my business, or if I was like, oh, well, you know, my cash flow is looking a little sick right now, sick in a bad way, not sick in a good way. And it's because we're in a seasonal business. It just makes you hungry. It makes you innovative. And I'm not sitting just waiting on someone to tell me, okay, so this is what you need to do to move up. It's like, it's just in me. To that this has to work, so it's not going to fail. So that's, and it's just a great feeling all around.
Since making that decision, are you happy?
I absolutely love the decision that I made. So I've never been the person to live in regret. Like, I would sit back and say, dang, I wish I didn't do it that way. And then I auto correct myself really quickly and say, you went through that for a reason. So I have no regrets on leaving when I did, where I did, how I did. You know, I did everything what I feel is the correct way. Now, when you do work for yourself and you're in a service-based business, you really don't work for yourself. And when I tell people that, they're like, what are you talking about? You don't have a boss. All of my clients are my bosses. I essentially am working for their particular event. So that's why I have to make sure that my schedule is in alignment with making it happen for that particular wedding, for that 65th birthday party, for that 3-day sales event that she's going to generate, you know, all kind of money from. But having that freedom to actually choose. I choose who I want to work with. At first, I just took whatever came my way, but now I've honed into what I like to do. And I feel like if you're going to work for yourself, you need to do things that make you happy. So I don't work with anyone that's going to be a emotional vulture that just sucks the life out of you. Like, I can go back and sit in a cubicle for that. So I can choose my clients. I can choose the projects I want to work on. And then I can choose the services that I provide. So it makes me freaking happy. And I can work anywhere. I can, as long as I have a cell phone and a Wi-Fi spot, I can. So I've been able to work in Birmingham and be with my aging parents. I can work in Tennessee and see my sisters. I can work in Miami because I just feel like going to Miami. And I don't have to be in person with anyone. As long as I have a phone and an internet connection, I can be wherever I need to be.
BG, this is inspiring, sir.
It really is. Let's get to the plug, though, because, you know, this the event planning and the wedding planning world is very competitive. And I guess the quality and the capabilities of the companies varies. So what would you say separates what you've got going on from what these other people are doing?
And that's what I have to convey in every consultation. So you sell yourself every time. So what makes One Touch Events unique is that we bring our all. And I say we because I do have a team. And we all work as a well-oiled machine to make it happen for you. So whereas other companies, you know, I'm not as in tune to their business processes. I can really care because I'm trying to do us. I'm trying to do me. But what makes us unique from an execution standpoint, which is huge. Like, you can make things pretty and you can have all your T's crossed and your I's dotted. But if you don't know how to execute, all those plans go to waste. So we're clutch. Case in point, this weekend had a wedding that there were a lot of hiccups. It was way more than I'm used to that are not outside of my comfort zone, but, you know, for a one-touch event, for someone that would go to each and every one of my weddings, they could say that they're executed exactly the same. So when hiccups come around, we have a sense of composure and quick-wittedness. You know, so that's part of when I was a consultant and we had to do things on the fly or your scope changes. So I brought all of that, you know, thinking on your feet and being able to adapt and change and do it, you know, swiftly and like in stealth mode, where it's like, oh, wait a minute. You know, we thought this was an issue, but Jillian already handled it. So it's like being the Olivia Pope wedding planner. We make it happen. But those are part of it. And then also from all the pre-planning standpoint, One Touch Events is a system-based business. I'm all about streamlining. And again, that goes from my background in IT and business process design, where my clients, even if you're not internet savvy or tech savvy, I have processes in place that will help you with your planning. So you're not going to get a whole lot of paper. The only paper you're going to receive is when we meet in person, I give you your consultation packet, but everything else is going to be streamlined. I have a event management tool, which is very similar to a project management tool, where we go in and we're going to streamline your wedding planning. So you're not stressed the hell out because you're like, oh, I need to order these save the dates. And now I got to go get some cupcakes. And then I need to plan my bridal shower. Say, like, wait, let's take a step back. Let's compartmentalize your planning into a timeline. And that timeline is, this is what you need to work on now. And then don't think about the rest of this for another 6 months. You're good. And then here's your three month mark. This is the things we need to work on. So it's all about the experience. I am here to cultivate an experience that you want to tell your girlfriends or your guy friends that, you know, my wedding planner was like the bomb. If people say the bomb, like, she was amazing. I've been able to hire other brides because they were bridesmaids in my previous client's wedding. And it's a full experience for the wedding, you know, on the wedding side for the wedding party. They're like, wow, we have never been in such a organized environment. Like, we actually knew what was going on. We knew where we needed to be. Why not? You know, and that's what makes us stand apart.
Where did you come up with the name One Touch Event?
That was, it took me forever. Like, naming your company has been, you know, like, I'm in a number of different business Facebook groups and in discussion threads. And that's always the hardest part. Like, how do you name your company? Because I toy with Jillian Smith Events, Jay Lovejoy, you know, my middle name is Lovejoy, you know, like just playing around with acronyms and this, that, and the third. But, you know, I said, well, let me just sit here and do some free writing. So I just talked about like what, you know, I wrote about what I thought my business was, what do I bring to the table, why should someone choose me? And I just kept coming up with this touch. Like, I wanted you to have a full sensory experience at your wedding. Like, the food that you taste, the smell of the room, the you know, from a sight, like all of your five senses are heightened with working with me, because I'm taking into all those considerations for your guest experience as well as your own. And it's my touch. And I didn't want to be my touch. It's just, it takes my touch to help you with that, which is really just one touch. And that's how it came about.
It's amazing. The website is amazing. So, you know, I think that speaks a lot about the quality of the services that you provide. This ain't your grandmama wedding planner that ain't got no website that you can't get in contact with. You got to go through somebody. You got to call Bebe to get through.
Jumba. It's,
yeah, to get through, to say you looking for them. Nah, this ain't that kind of thing. Everything is really streamlined, like she said.
And as we approach the hour, I really don't want to keep Jill too long, but I have one last question for you that I kind of wanted you to use to wrap up and really summarize our entire conversation. So you mind answering this last question?
Go ahead, sure.
Tell me or interpret to me what this means to you. Never complain about the things you choose. Hate your job, hate your relationship, hate where you live. You choose that, don't like it, change it. What does that mean to you?
Well, I know you're sharing something that I shared on my Instagram, which is at One Touch Events LLC.
Oh, you're on Instagram. We're gonna let you plug.
But what that means to me is that you are in charge of helping identify your destiny. And when I say helping identify your destiny, as I mentioned earlier in the broadcast, God already has a plan for you, but sometimes it's up to you to actually move in that direction on your own, because you have free will. And if you don't choose to get out of that mindset of, oh, I hate this, I hate that, this is not working well for me, well, why not change it? All you got to do is, you just have to try. There's the only thing that my grandmother used to say, the only thing that beats a failure is a try, or something like that. I'm not really good at quotes. I can, you know, copy and paste them, but I can't say it. But the only thing that beats a failure is a try. At least try it out, because you never know what is in store. I moved from one side of the city to the other because I didn't like where I was living. And the only reason that I was still there is because I was like, oh, I have a mortgage. Sell the freaking thing. Like, why do you have to be there and be miserable? Why am I still at this job that I hate? Why not move and do something else? Or if you're in the relationship and you're just miserable, why are you still in this relationship? Unless you try to go and do your counseling or whatever, you're not putting any energy. And the energy, similar to the alchemist, whatever you put into the universe, the whole universe, the energy you put out, the universe conspires to make it happen for you. And I am a true believer in that. The energy that I'm putting out there is going to come back to me tenfold. And I want to be able to help someone else understand how to make that energy happen for them.
Hashtag the secret.
Hashtag the secret.
Hey, BG, this was inspiring, sir.
It got me crunked up, so my job situation might be in trouble come Monday morning.
I'm telling you, because...
I'm going to hear deal, boy. Change it. Change it.
Change it.
Change it.
Hey, but BG, like I mentioned in the introduction, she's a verb in a world full of nouns.
And a hungry hyena.
She's a hungry hyena.
A cute one. A cute one.
Yeah, she's cute, man. For sure. That's all the, yes, indeed. Yeah, that's definitely she is.
Oh, fellas, I mean, are you in a relationship before I put this out there?
I'm on that J and B type thing. Like, y'all not going to know anything about that.
What's J and B?
She pulling a superstar moment on us, man. She said she's going to keep her stuff secret. We're going to just find out when it's official. We just going to find out. Well, there ain't going to be no lead up.
Well, fellas, she loves a good glass of Malbec. Straight from the website. Straight from the website. So when you get a chance to come across it, go to a website. How can they, what's your website, Jill?
I can be found online at OneTouchEventsLLC.com. I can't say www, but y'all should know that, people. OneTouchEventsLLC.com. The same would be for Facebook and Instagram, OneTouchEventsLLC. I am also found on Twitter and Periscope at OneTouchEvents. So just leave off the LLC. But once you start typing it in, you'll find me on all of those social media outlets.
BG.
What's up, boy?
How can the people reach us?
And they can reach us at the same place as always, freelunchpodcast.com for podcasts and blogs. Also, check for us on Instagram, Free Lunch Podcast. Let us know what you think about this episode on Twitter, Free Lunch Pod-C, and check for our videos on YouTube, Free Lunch TV.
Man, amazing interview.
Amazing. We wish you all the best, too, Jill, and everything that you do.
We do. And also, just want to leave the people with D1 Sports Talk podcast, a new podcast that's part of the New South Movement Network. Definitely want you guys to go out and catch out myself as well as Coach as we talk about sports and entertainment. You can reach us at D1 Sports Talk podcast.blogspot.com. D1 Sports Talk podcast is our Instagram. And also, you can hit us up on the Gmail, d1sportstalkpodcast@gmail.com. I am your boy, Tight. That is my man, BG.
Yep.
We also got Jill with us. Thank you for joining us, One Touch Events, Free Lunch Podcast. We are home to the New South Movement. Peace.
Let's get it. Let's go, let it go now. Let's go, let it go now. Let it go, let's get it. Super mathematics, not a problem. No lie for that old block. So sign away for that bull rock. Super small, handcrafted art designs. No, they know not. Flow tougher than tough time. Blacker than the gram, they drum line. No overdose, I'm overwoke. I be away from crunch time. Be airway like sunshine. I lead right cross. Punchline, I beat the track. I beat the track. Brown paper breakfast. Lunchtime, dinner date, dessert tray. Ramadan, flow hungry. You see the sign between the lines. Only no dummies, I flow lovely, they go nothing, they catch feeling these hoes touchy. I tell that jump off no bunch, no awaken, whole study. But you're so pretty, bless your soul. Sometimes the best way to touch him, stand and go. And let's go, let's get it. And let's go, let it go now. Let it go, let's get it. Get it, got him. And let's go, let's get it. And let's go, let it go now. Before I chose the path chose me. This is the Lord's plan, divine decree.